dog mamas and dog lovers. I'm Dana Brigman of the Canine Coach Carolinas and Well-Oiled Canine. This podcast is dedicated to all things natural wellness and behavior for dogs. In these upcoming podcasts, we will spend time talking about nutrition, essential oils, homeopathy, and behavior that you can consider as part of your own wellness journey with your dog. I'll take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is for educational purposes only. When we are speaking about natural wellness, we are not intending to diagnose, treat, or cure any disease or illness that your pet may have. You will be encouraged to reach out to a professional or your own veterinarian for additional support. When we're talking about behavior, you're encouraged to seek the guidance of a professional trainer or behaviorist to help you reach your goals. So now I invite you to come, sit, and stay well as you enjoy the show. So hi everybody, it's Dana Brigman of the Canine Coach Carolinas, and I have with me today Kim Artley, and she is in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area and is the owner of a dog. What is it? Dog behavior and wellness business that she calls Pack Fit. So I'm going to turn it over to her, let her say hi, give a little background about herself, and then we're going to dive into what behavior and wellness looks like from her point of view.
Oh, goodness. Pressure's on. I run a dog training and behavior company, like you said, in the Washington, D.C. metro area. So I'm actually based in Northern Virginia, but I service Washington, D.C. and Maryland and surrounding parts. And I will travel to help families and their dogs. I went to South Carolina last week, so I also
Come on, that's where I am.
Oh, South Carolina?
What part of South Carolina were you in?
Oh, Columbia.
Okay, well, so that's probably a couple hours from here. I'm down at the beach.
Oh, nice.
The coastal area, but yeah, awesome.
Very nice. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us about Pack Fit. What does that mean? How did you get into all of this? And what are the game changers that you're seeing in terms of behavior and working with those difficult dogs? And then, of course, their people.
Ooh, wow. Such a loaded question.
I know. That's why I bring it out.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. If I start to veer off tangent, then just reel me back in.
Okay, we'll do.
So let's see. Where should I start? Pack Fit evolved because of a game changer dog that I had. His name was Lobo. Mm-hmm. He was one of my greatest teachers. At the time, I was life coaching, health coaching, nutrition counseling, and I was teaching kickboxing and yoga and Pilates. So very much enmeshed in the health and wellness arena on the human end of things.
Right.
And I was married at the time, and then my ex was basically very much an indoorsy kind of guy, and I was very much an outdoorsy kind of gal. So I basically got sick and tired of asking him if he wanted to leave the house and the computer. So I got a dog. And I'd always been an animal lover and a dog lover. Mm-hmm. Not so much an understander. That would come much later, which is really what I focus on teaching my clients, how mm-hmm. to understand their dogs, read their dogs, understand what behavior is. Behavior is a manner of expression. It's a response, and it always has an underlying driving force and a seed. So we ended up getting a divorce, and I was working with Lobo, and I was expanding my knowledge base, and I knew that exercise was good. So we were hiking and jogging and walking and doing all of this. I knew that exposure was good. I was exposing him to different people, different dogs, different situations and scenarios and environments and this and that. I mean, he was a well-rounded, well-adjusted. I did some obedience training with him, and he was, you know, what I considered to be at the time a well-trained dog. And when we divorced, it was like a switch flicked in him. And all of a sudden, he was once this well-rounded, well-adjusted dog, all of a sudden became very imbalanced and overly protective, highly aggressive. And in my mindset at the time, and this is such a common mindset when it comes to folks and their dogs, it was Lobo with a problem. It was Lobo that needed training. It was Lobo that needed fixing. And it was, you know, Lobo, Lobo, Lobo. And I went through about 6 or 7 different trainers, literally spent thousands of dollars that I did not have at the time, went into a significant amount of debt. All of these trainers that I'd hired were, they fell into the spectrum of the purely positive group. Mm-hmm. And so they were, you know, they were popping them full of treats and really harping and loading down on the obedience factor of things. So he was still a well-trained dog, but yet he was not a well-behaved dog. And there were a lot of ingredients that they didn't speak to. I don't know. Maybe they weren't aware of them. I don't know. But there were parts of Lobo, parts of the dog, parts of the relationship, and a lot of influential ingredients that they did not address or speak to. The last program that I entered him into was a 2-week board and train, and he responded well when he was there. He was around other dogs, no issue. Other people, no issue. And then as soon as he returned to me, he went right back to his old behaviors. And that's a huge piece of information that I did not, it didn't register with me. I wasn't aware enough. I wasn't ready or open enough to see it, to realize it, to understand it. Nobody was pointing it out to me. So he ended up biting somebody pretty significantly, and he had to be put down. And that crushed me. That absolutely crushed me. I mean, he was my everything at the time. And so that lit a fire in me, and my path changed, and I was on this hell, I still am on this hell-bent mission to learn everything that I could about behavior, to learn everything I could about dog psychology, to learn everything I could about dogs and the relationship and just the human ingredient, like all the various influential contributing ingredients that impact and contribute to state of mind and behavior. And that's what I do. And I focus, my primary focus is helping people that are struggling with their dogs, helping dogs that are in struggle.
Right.
So yeah, Lobo lives on through everything that I do.
I feel the same way about my Vinny. He's the reason that I am doing what I do today. And I wish I had known way back then what I know now.
Yeah.
Because I think his outcome would have been quite different.
Yes.
But they're all here to teach us something. They're here, if nothing more than to put us on the path we're on.
Yes.
And let us move forward through that. But, you know, if you can, when you look back at Lobo and you think, okay, he was very well trained. We had the obedience in place, but there was something missing in his ability to behave and not bite.
Yeah.
What do you see now looking back that was part of the, what was missed?
He got it. My little, I've got a wire-haired dachshund that I'm fostering. He's a aggression rehab. And he's my fly catcher.
Yeah.
He just got one. So if you see him whizzing around because there might be a fly somewhere in here, that's okay. What's going on. I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Well, I'm just asking, when you look back now at Lobo,
because
you talked about how none of the trainers really, they were into obedience, but they weren't into behavior. What does that look like to you now? What would be different?
So I train, I teach what I call the four elements of, Packfit's four elements of training. It's foundational training first, obedience training, state of mind conditioning, and behavior shaping. Foundational training is more just developing and strengthening relationship, that trust and respect factor. If we do not have this, if this is not present in our relationship with our dogs, we've got nothing to build upon. We've got mm-hmm. nothing to grow from. And they will likely give us the middle finger every time we ask them to do something or tell them
right.
to do something. Relationship is everything. So I really, and nothing can replace that. No collar, no leash, no tool, no nothing. Nothing can replace it. Obedience training is just straight up brain training. It's subscribing meaning to verbal cues and commands. So like sit, butt to the ground, down, belly to the ground, off, get off, whatever it is you're jumping on. Right. So there's that part of it. State of mind conditioning. I would say that the two biggest elements that were the three biggest elements that were really missing and lacking in what went down with Lobo was one, just being aware of state of mind stuff, his state of mind. Two, his instinctual, individual, and breed-specific needs that were lacking and that I may not have been fulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
And three, the human ingredient, the part that I played in everything. Everything we share is information, especially when we're not speaking. It's all a conversation, and we're in constant dialogue with them. And at that time, I was not in a good space. I was not in a good place when the divorce went down. I had lost my footing. I lost my grounding. I lost my sense of self. I was constantly nervous and anxious and stressed out beyond belief. It's all information. And he was feeding directly off of that and responding directly to that. I was not a source of information that he could rely on, that he could trust, that he felt safe and secure and comfortable following. So I lost that in his mind, in his eyes. So going back to the four elements, so foundational, obedience, state of mind conditioning. State of mind is fuel for any given behavior. It's juice for any given behavior. Mm-hmm. And when we learn how to manage and control and condition a dog's state of mind, we're also managing and controlling the rest of the body, because the body always follows what the mind is doing. So if the mind is calm and relaxed, the rest of the body is going to be calm and relaxed. If the mind is jacked up and ramped, then the rest of the body is going to follow in suit.
Mm-hmm.
So, and just, you know, there's of course state of mind conditioning. This is like such a big topic that I often teach about, because there's a lot of ingredients that really impact and influence and contribute to just that part.
Sure.
And then the last one is behavior shaping. And I break behavior into two different categories. The first one being classroom behavior, and the second one being what I call real world and functional behavior. So classroom behavior is kind of like the difference between what kids learn in school versus what they should be learning at home.
Mm-hmm.
So like classroom behavior, the more purposed stuff, the more task-oriented stuff, brain training, you know, just like it's search and rescue and agility, obedience, things of that nature. And then real world and functional behavior is, it's all about relationship. It's about state of mind conditioning. It's about teaching the difference between okay and not okay, impulse control, all of that stuff.
Right.
So those are the four elements that I really base my programming on. I try to educate and I try to train my folks, and there are times where some people will sign on, and I know that I have this sixth sense about me. I know they're not going to be invested. I know they're not going to maintain. They're not going, you know, there's this common thought that if someone throws money at a problem, that it's going to fix the problem. But I mean, it's so, especially when it comes to behavior, it's far more involved than that. Like there's some sweat equity involved.
A lot.
Yeah.
There's an energy to it, a mental acuity to it that I don't think a lot of people really stop and say, what is my role in this behavior that's going on? I mean, I see that all the time. Puppies are behavior alike, and it's like, here, train my dog, and I'm like, nope, I gotta fix you. Human are the key to this.
Yeah, we are their main we're their main information source. You know, they're looking to us for what to do. They're looking to us for their cues, their guidance, their directives, their information, how to feel about each and every situation we bring them into.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if we're not in a good space, that's information. You know, mm-hmm. we're developing their self-concept and their world concept. I mean, it's and what I mean by that is just how they feel in their own skin and also how they feel in the world around them.
Yeah.
We're really contributing and influencing and developing that.
Right. So how do you approach that with the human client, right? Some, you know, they call and say, my dog's got aggressive behavior. He's bitten a couple of people. And oh, by the way, you know, we've got dynamics changing in the family. Maybe there's a divorce going on. You and I can't get into their psychology directly. I mean, we can, but we've got to be super careful about that. And they're not always bought into what, like we just said, they're not always bought into, they even have a role in it. It's here, train my dog and bring him back to me.
Uh-oh, you froze.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay. it stopped at, they don't always buy into, and then it froze.
I was just looking at my screen. It said my internet is unstable, which is odd because we have a commercial router in here.
Oh.
So something's up. But anyway, we'll edit this out. See, I told you. what I was saying was they're not always bought into that they even have a role in it, right? It's my dog, just like you said in your earlier piece, my dog has a behavior problem. My dog needs to be fixed. And
yeah.
Really what we need to be having a conversation about is way bigger than that. So how do you approach that with the client and really shift that buy-in to what training really ought to become?
Yeah. So when I start out, I conduct what I call the IBAC. It's the initial behavioral assessment and consultation. And this is like 2 to 2.5 hours in length. And it's super info heavy. I'm planting a great deal of seeds and a lot of food for thought as well. Of course, you know, I'm asking questions and I'm reading and assessing and I'm looking at the dynamics between the people and the relationships there and the energy and whether or not there's tension and like, I'm looking at how everybody's addressing and responding and sharing space with the dog and have, like, I'm looking at a number of things.
Of course.
So after the IBAC, this doesn't obligate anybody to work with me, but I'm laying a lot of ground and planting a lot of seeds. And even though I will sign on with people who I know will not be invested and may not get the results that they want, which is really sad. I never devalue the ability to plant a seed. To me, it's not, yes, results are amazing. But some people are not at a point in their lives to receive, to first of all, be open to,
mm-hmm.
Seeing what might be going down. Nor are they necessarily open to receiving information that can help shift things. A lot of people are very stuck in their ways. They don't want to shift. They don't want to change. That's their journey. That's whatever that is. But I do approach it delicately, and I never miss opportunities to plant seeds. So, I I've just had to learn to lower my expectations.
All right.
I give them all I can. Everybody gets enrolled. I've got 4 online courses. Everybody immediately gets enrolled in those. Canine Essentials, Training the Whole Dog, What to Feed Your Dog and Why. And I published a book last year called My Dog, My Buddha. And I turned that into an online course, and then I added some additional information and food for thought, and like every lesson has a supplemental PDF, so it's kind of like a daily journal.
Mm-hmm.
But So everybody gets enrolled in all those, and it's self-paced. And then I give them a welcome kit, anything that we're going to be using in the training or whatever, and just extra stuff that I'll put in there that I think would enhance their experience. Because, you know, when I'm working with someone, it's not so much about the dog and results. It's more about creating awareness, developing understanding, and just the experience of working together, the experience of working more with your dog, and it's more about experience.
So can you give me an example of like a client and a dog that has I mean, it could be an aggressive behavior, maybe a unique issue that you've seen now over the years, and how the program sort of evolved into what was sort of the magic, right? It may not have been the obedience work, but what was sort of the unlocking of something creative or something unique that allowed a resolution that really needed to happen, but might have been very different than what they thought it was going to be?
I've got a couple stories, actually. The first one is I was working with a woman who had adopted an Aussie Shepherd, a huge Aussie Shepherd, from a shelter. Mm-hmm. And this dog had a very, very strong energy. It was just a strong energy. I'm not talking about high energy. That speaks more to the physical part, the physicality of a dog, but just mentally strong. He was a strong dog. And this woman was such a sweet, just a very soft, soft-spoken, soft energy, little French lady. And there was a massive gap there in between the two.
Right.
So this dog just came in and took over everything. Walks were a nightmare. He was extremely on edge and reactive and challenging and all this glorious stuff. She'd been through a couple of trainers, no dice. And then I was like, okay, so we put a backpack on him on his walks, gave him a job to do. We were talking about, taking him out to herd and all these mm-hmm. other things. So that's great. But, the energy part of it was really keeping me stuck. I was like, how can we do this? How can we raise her energy so that he felt safe and comfortable enough to lower his and look to her for what to do and all of that stuff? Because in his eyes and in his mind, she did not represent someone that he felt good about looking to.
He was she was not his leader.
Yeah, she wasn't taking charge, so he did, and it created all sorts of chaos. So I actually, because I told you in the beginning, I used to teach kickboxing, and that was always, it was such an empowering form of exercise. Mm-hmm. You'd finish a class and you walk around like, yeah, that's right. So I was like, okay, so what can we do? And I asked her if she would be open to taking like a kickboxing class or a martial arts class, just to help shift some energy and like raise her level of confidence and what have you. And lucky for me, she was fully invested and she was open and she was like, absolutely, I've always wanted to try. And I'm like, great, let's do it. So she ended up taking some kickboxing classes, and not only she shed a few couple pounds, so I mean, she was happy about that. But, you know, lo and behold, she started showing up in her space differently. She started feeling, she felt different in her own skin, and it was reflecting in mm-hmm. everything. I mean, it's a ripple effect. It's not just impacting, how her dog viewed her, but also, how she was showing up at work, how she was showing up everywhere, in every role that she had. But I mean, her confidence level changed, her energy changed. She was bringing more to the table. And when that shift happened, it created shift in her dog. So things, I mean, it wasn't immediate, of course, but I mean, it was a noticeable difference. And their relationship, I mean, then their relationship could start really, really growing. Mm-hmm. So, So there was that one, and then there was another dog who came from like a champion line of detection dogs, a lab, and this woman had also gone through a couple trainers, and you know, this lab just always had her nose to the ground, and she was like super pushy on walks, and it was a nightmare to walk her, and she was so high drive and high energy and uncontrollable. And she had a lot of anxiety. The woman was calling her problem child. And there were a lot of dynamics going on in the home. A lot of tense relationships between the mother, the father, the child, and a lot of stress, a lot of this and that. So she was open to discussing all that with me, luckily. So we discussed that, and I had her out on a walk, and I mean, she had her nose to the ground the whole time. She's dragging me here, dragging me there. They had gone through a couple trainers, and the trainers, you know, they had her e-collar trained, and we're using all sorts of different collars and tools or whatever, trying to, you know, make her make different choices, not do that. And I was like, you know, she's just she needs nose work. She needs to use her nose more. She needs to fulfill this aspect of her. It's like telling, you know, it's like telling Barbara Streisand, you can't sing ever. It's like telling Mozart, no, you cannot create music. It's like, this was such a huge part of her that was not getting spoken to, and it was not getting channeled and fulfilled and developed and all of this. And, you know, when dogs have, especially if they're like a pure breed of dog that has a lot of drive and it's just ingrained in them to fulfill a very specific purpose, and they don't have an outlet or a channel to do so, it creates a great deal of frustration and anxiety and all that stuff, which is usually underlying a lot of the behaviors that we're seeing. Again, like when we're speaking to the emotional body of the dog, behavior is a response. It's a manner of expression. When dogs feel, they can't be like, hey, I need a couch session for about an hour so I can talk with you about all this. You know, they can't express in the way that we understand. So they express in a way that a lot of people don't understand, and they get labeled and judged for it. And, you know, I don't call dogs aggressive dogs. Dogs are having an aggressive response to something. So anyways, that's completely off a tangent. But so we started doing nose work, and we started really fulfilling that aspect of her, and it started shaving off a lot of the intensity levels of a number of the different behaviors and the expressions that she was having. So,
yeah, I'm very much with you on the embrace the natural instinct of the breed. And I think that is a missed opportunity way too often, right? Yeah. And that we often have people who get a dog and don't really understand what it was bred to do in the first place.
Yeah.
And then they want it to be the dog that sits on the couch, yeah, versus the dog that's out working. And I'm like, you don't get to choose. You don't get to choose who your dog really is at their core. You have to embrace it if you're going to fulfill them and eliminate, yeah, these bad behaviors.
Yeah. That's what, I mean, we really harp on the fulfilling needs part of things, the aspect, yeah, of things, like individual needs. Is your dog introverted, extroverted, highly sensitive, on edge, fearful, nervous, mm-hmm, anxious, you know, whatever is going on, high energy, strong energy, low energy, soft energy.
Do you find that when you're making your assessments that you know, people will call and say, my dog has behavior X.
Yep.
And this is what we want fixed. And really that is just a symptom or a subset of a much bigger, more profound issue that they haven't even identified.
Yeah.
And, you know, how do you have that conversation with them to say, I get it. I you see this, but we gotta wrap our arms around a much bigger thing here. How do you have those conversations with folks?
I usually that's what the IBAC really speaks to.
Okay.
And it's I mean, it's just it's highly detailed.
Yeah.
It's really important to me that people understand that they understand that, you know, what they're seeing, the behavior, is an expression of something else. And there are a lot of teeny tiny pieces that fit together to create the bigger puzzle. And right. So it's, you can't just address one piece. You've got to address all the others, mm-hmm. you know, to really impact the other side of things.
Right. So when we started the conversation, you mentioned that you also are looking at the nutrition side of things and the wellness side of things. Tell me about bringing that into your program.
Yeah. So, I mean, nutrition is so important. I had another dog that I lost at 6.5 because of the flea and tick preventatives that I had been using on him. I haven't used that stuff in about 10 years.
Right.
Now.
Me too.
I control, I mean, not even heartworm preventative. I control everything through diet and supplementation. And lifestyle and living. Like, I'm not going to go dance around in the middle of summer in a huge, you know, field of weeds. But I mean, it's just, you know, it's being conscious.
Right.
After he passed, I threw myself into that. I was like, I've got to know. There's a reason why things die when they bite or land on our dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, there's got to be a way to control this without poison. So I learned that fleas and ticks target the animals with the weaker immune system. So I was like, okay, so how do we really bolster and strengthen the immune system? One is through less vaccinations. You know, we're over vaccinating, titer testing, and all of that.
Right.
And what we don't understand and what we're not told is that most vaccinations will last the lifetime of the dog, or at least 7 years. So what a titer test, for those of you that may not know, what a titer test will reveal is whether or not the dog still has antibodies in their system left over from the last round of vaccination. So we're not bombarding and inundating their system with extra stuff. That absolutely takes a hit on the immune system. Stress and anxiety, of course. If you have dogs with behavioral issues too, that's going to take a hit on the immune system. But diet and nutrition, that's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
Every animal alive, their physiology is information. And every animal's physiology is giving us information as to what they should be taking in for a strong immune system and for health. Like chickens, for example, they've got beaks, they've got claws, they're constantly scratching at the ground and pecking at the ground. That's so they can pull up bugs and worms and insects and stuff. That's their native diet. That's their ancestral diet.
Right.
That's what they should be taking in. When an animal takes in food or food-like product, when they take in a diet that's unnatural to their physiology, it creates malnourishment and inflammation in the system, just like with people. And those are the two main underlying culprits underneath a lot of the ailments and the illnesses and a lot of stuff, outside of genetics that, of course, influences too. But we can upplay or downplay genetics through lifestyle and through nutrition. So I kind of gauge, not everybody, like everybody's got different value systems. And like for me, like health, wellness, nutrition, you know, fitness and activity and stress management, like all these things, relationships, like that's what I really value those things. So I'm going to be so into, if I have a conversation with somebody about it, I'm going to be all in. But you know, a lot of folks glaze over, a lot of folks is not so high on their value system, not too high on their priority list. So I kind of, you know, say, we do cover nutrition, a great deal because it does, not only is it important for the health of the dog, but it also does impact and influence state of mind and behavior, which is why I'm there to see them.
Sure.
So, you know, I can give them the 5-cent tour of it, or I can, you know, I can really go deep if they're interested. Because I know that nutrition's a very personal topic. It's like talking religion or politics. So I'm very conscientious of that. But yeah, I do, nutrition is something I'm incredibly passionate about. So I do try to plant a lot of seeds in that department.
Yeah, me too. And it's not always easy. And a lot of times I'm looking at the dog going, your diet must change. And in fact, I'm getting better in my old age of saying, no, you really are going to do this. It's not negotiable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just like I met with a client just yesterday. And the diet the dog is eating is almost 60% carbohydrate. And I'm like, we are not doing this. We can't, this cannot happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, so at some point you just have to say, no, look, if you want this to be better, you've got to change everything. And I'm getting better at, I try to be gentle, but sometimes you just have to go hardcore and say, you can't do it. You can't do what you're doing and expect a good result.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I'm assuming you're in the raw feeding category. Do you do your own home prepared foods or?
Yeah, I do mix it up. I'll feed occasionally. Like the only commercially produced raw food that I recommend to folks, because a lot of clients, even though I'm there to coach and support and I pump them full of information, they got the course and like all of that stuff, a lot of people are still kind of, you know, hesitant, like life outside the bag. And I get it. It can be overwhelming. And it's just, it's a new way of feeding, even though it's like the oldest way of feeding.
Right.
Can it? But the only commercially produced raw food that I recommend to them is Answers. Have you heard of them?
Sure.
Yeah. They do an excellent job. But other than that, yeah, I do my own.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. So, what else can you tell us about sort of this whole psychology, the relationships, the engagements? Is there anything more you want to dig into in terms of the magic you create or things that you'd like people to start thinking about differently with their own dogs? You know, maybe those that don't yet have a problem, but need to start thinking a little differently.
I'm again, just going back to the fulfillment of needs, the individual needs that a dog has, like you have to know your dog.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to spend time with your dog. You have to know what might cause or create some overwhelm, what they're sensitive to, you know, what they really enjoy, what they not so much. just get to know your dog for the individual that he or she is.
Yeah.
Because when we know our dog, when we can read our dog, we can better advocate for our dog. We can better equip and teach our dog. And that's another thing. I mean, communication goes way above and beyond anything verbal. And there's a massive language barrier that exists between a lot of dogs and their people. And we have to learn how to communicate in a manner that they understand. You can't teach anything without learning how to communicate effectively. And the problem that I often see is that, I mean, humans, we're constantly sending a lot of mixed cues and mixed signals. Like our verbal cues might be saying one thing, but our energy is saying something
right.
Different. Our vocal inflection, pitch, and tone is saying something completely different. That also can really trigger state of mind.
Mm-hmm.
The way that we're holding the leash is saying something different. Our body language, our posture, like all of those facial expressions, all of those things contribute to a message. And humans are very difficult for dogs to read.
Yes.
You know? And we create a lot of confusion.
Sure.
In them. And so just becoming more self-aware and learning how to streamline all of these different ways that we're communicating with them can really help. I mean, again, we cannot teach anything without understanding how to communicate in a manner that they get.
Right. And that's so hard for people. And for me, it's just one of the most natural things that I do, right? I mean, I feel like I can communicate with my dog, other dogs, and not ever say a word, just not even open my mouth. And they know exactly what my expectation of them is.
Yeah. It goes way above nonverbal.
Yeah, and trying to get other people to feel that, to figure out how to do that is really tricky. You know, just this morning I was with a client and they've got a young puppy. He's about 4 months old, and he continues to jump on the mom. He continues to do things that she doesn't like. And I'm like, you need to convey to him energetically that was the last time that's ever going to happen.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm like, you don't even have to use words. You just need to sort of feel it in your gut and project that energy towards him. And he's going to go, ooh. Whoa. And she's trying to figure that out. But because he doesn't jump on me. He doesn't jump on dad. He doesn't, you know. And she's just sort of tolerant, and she's lighthearted when she talks to him. And, oh, he's precious and adorable and such a baby. And I'm like, yeah, but you hate his behavior. You fuss at me every time I come because you don't like him jumping on you.
One of the lessons in My Dog, My Buddha is be the parent, not the friend.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I think a lot of folks also really struggle with when it comes to their dogs. Like I had a 4 or 5 star general that I worked with, and very commanding presence. And he's done significant things in his line of work. Very well respected. And I was called to help him with his little white fluffy dog who ran the show. Mm-hmm. Like when it came to, he might be one way at work, but when it came to his little white fluffy dog at home, it was a much different story. He just turned to a little bowl of mush. Like this dog, this dog was king. Yeah. So I see that often. There's something about the human canine dynamic. It people feel bad. There's so many, like if you want to raise a well-mannered, well-adjusted, balanced dog, it's very, very similar to raising a well-adjusted, well-mannered, balanced child.
Sure.
You know, they've got to have structure and order. There's a natural order and a natural structure to how everything operates in nature and in the animal kingdom. It just is what it is. It's always been that way.
Mm-hmm.
And when we bring dogs into our homes and into our lives and there's no order, there's no structure, there's no boundaries or parameter, like nothing, it does create anxiety and confusion and like inner chaos. There's so many parallels to raising a child, and they need rules and boundaries, and they need discipline. There's a yin and yang to discipline. They do need mental engagement and stimulation. The brain is an organ, and it craves opportunities to problem solve and to connect dots and to learn and to get its fill, and they're putting things together. Physical exercise, man, especially in America, like we've really got to meet this part of the dog.
Yeah.
If you have like a super low energy dog, like you don't have to take them on an hour and a half walk or anything, but just know your dog, but yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you.
A lot of parallels.
A lot. And I don't know that people always stop and recognize them. And as you said early on, it's like, here, take my money, fix my dog and hand him back to me when I'm like, that's not how it works.
that's why people like myself, you know, earlier with Lobo, that's why people end up frustrated having spent a certain amount of money going through a number of different trainers trying to fix a problem that, you know, you're going to learn something from everybody you work with, but it's, I think, we really have to redefine oh, we have to redefine a lot of terms in the dog training world, but we have to redefine what dog training really is. And in order for people to get the most appropriate help.
Yeah.
Well,
we touched on this a little bit too. It's not obedience as a standalone thing, right? If you want to go do competition level obedience work, rock on. There's a lot of fun in that. It's not my style,
yeah.
Right? And it takes a very specific energy of dog.
Yeah.
But just obedience is not relationship building, and it is not problem solving. It may be the language we use to get to some of those things, but it's not the complete resolution. Yeah. So you mentioned earlier something about somebody, I forget the word you said she called her dog, but like he was a spoiled brat or
problem
whatever.
Child.
Can we talk a little bit about sort of that unconscious language or even the conscious language that we're using and how that may affect outcomes?
Oh, yeah. There is power and there is energy and there is intention behind our words.
Mm-hmm.
The saying, it's not what we say, it's how we say it, but it's coming from someplace. And when we speak words, we are creating a certain truth that we operate through. Is that, oh, are you still there? You froze again.
No, I'm here. I'm looking at you.
We create a certain truth that we start creating like a program,
mm-hmm.
in a sense. You can tell a lot about a person by listening to their choice of words,
right.
And listening to how they describe situations, listening to how they, there was a meme that I saw that I really, really loved that I shared not too long ago on social media. And it was, it went something like this. If you become aware enough, you'll learn that people often tell on themselves. Or something like that. Or like, if you listen hard enough, people end up like telling on themselves. We're all
right.
telling ourselves, you know, we're all telling like a lot of our story and like our pain points and our joys and like our, the beliefs that we subscribe to,
yeah.
and all of that through our chosen words.
Right.
Language is not, it's not just about communication. Like we're sharing what we think and who we are and how we feel and all of that. There's a lot of power and there's a lot behind words and our choice of words. And if we develop a story, and this happens all the time in rescue too. And I always, I make a distinguishment between dog lovers and dog understanders. I think I said that earlier, and that's what I want to do, is help create that shift from people that love dogs, but we need to love them through understanding.
Right.
That's how we can best love them. And we are literally loving our dogs to the point of imbalance and insecurity and overwhelm and chaos and
yes.
all of this stuff. And but it happens often in rescue where, you know, a good intentioned, kind-hearted, wonderful person will take a dog that was rescued from living on a chain and maybe got fed once every 2 weeks, and they'll bring that dog into the home and they'll start trying to compensate for every wrong that was ever done to the dog, mm-hmm. in their mind. They might attach some other storylines on,
yeah.
on top of that.
Right.
And, you know, we don't give the dog and we don't give ourselves the opportunity to move on from the story. We stay shackled to the story. When we introduce our rescue dog, it's not, oh, hey, this is Baxter. We introduce the dog as, oh, this is Baxter, the rescue dog,
mm-hmm.
That I rescued from living on a chain, and he was only fed. Like, we introduce the story.
You're right in my brain, because I have this conversation with people all the time. I'm like, the story's over.
Yeah.
He was rescued.
Yes.
We have a new future.
Yes.
And that's where we're focused. And if you keep dwelling on the past, you and the dog are both going to stay in the past. So yeah. I am with you wholeheartedly about all of those things.
Yeah.
Let the story go. It is what it is. It got us here.
Yes.
And now we're moving out. We're moving
forward. In a better place now.
So exactly. Exactly.
Let's focus on the present.
So tell us about your book. Tell us how people can get in touch with you if they want to work with you or your page or any of those kinds of things.
Yeah. Let's see. Well, My Dog, My Buddha, it's available at every major book outlet, like Amazon.
Awesome.
And all that. So I'm actually just wrapping up the sequel now. So I've got the sequel coming out too. Soon. The online courses, that can also be found through my website. So my website is packfit.net. I've also got, you know, all the major social media channels.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. When we go live, all that'll be typed into the text of the podcast or the show notes, as they like to call them. So I'll make sure people can find that too.
Okay.
Any additional things you want to share? Any takeaways, parting words, pearls of wisdom?
Oh gosh. I'll probably think of it like an hour from now. Nothing off the top of my head, just, you know, meeting needs and learning how to communicate and, just knowing your dog and honoring your dog and respecting your dog for the animal and the individual and the breed or mix of breeds that they mm-hmm. are. I mean, I think that it's really important that we get a grip on ideals and expectations, when it comes to our dogs, and if they don't match what we have in our head, then, you know, they're not the problem.
Right.
Yeah, there's so many moving parts when it comes to dogs and behavior. It's hard to, yeah. So I would just say keep learning. learning and
to me that means spend some time with your dog. When you're taking for a walk, you're not on your phone. You're actually engaged with the dog.
Undivided attention.
Yeah.
You know, dogs are, especially urban, you know, home dogs are constantly getting the short end of the stick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got a new online course coming out called Nose Work for the Home Dog.
Awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really, really excited about it. I linked up with a gal that's heavy into nose work. I haven't announced who it is yet. But she travels the world giving seminars and workshops, and she's a judge, and like she knows her stuff.
Uh-huh.
But it's going to help so many dogs and
right.
their people, and I'm so stoked about it. It's just if you want an activity that really creates an umbrella and speaks to the whole dog, this one is it. Nose work is excellent, and it's
right.
for every dog, every age, every breed, every
right.
all of it.
Yeah.
So I'm really stoked.
I think it's a big deal. I'm not very skilled at it, but I do some game play with the dogs. My little dachshund, he's almost 16 now, but at one time he was the scent champion in our little classes that we were taking, and it's just fun. It's just a fun activity for them to do.
Yeah.
To truly be engaged and to be present with them. So I'll be looking forward to the online class. That'll be a lot of fun.
Thanks. Yeah, it's an all-encompassing activity. You know, it's a relationship. It speaks to the dog, like who he is as a dog.
Right.
It speaks to their level of confidence. It speaks to a lot of different, like the mental body, the emotional body, the physical body, all of it.
Right.
So, I'm excited.
Thanks for listening, everybody. This is Dana Brigman of the Canine Coach and Well-Oiled Canine. I'd love to have you be part of the team. As you are learning more about wellness and natural solutions for your own pets, please visit my website, caninecoach.dog, for a lot more information about nutrition, wellness, and behavior for your dogs. If you're interested in learning more about essential oils specifically, please visit my page, WellOiledK9.com. And we'd love to see you in our group. It's a Facebook group called Dogs Well Oiled and Well Fed. You can find it by going to the group section of Facebook, and our name is Well Oiled Canine. We look forward to seeing you there, and I would love to help you with a wellness review or any questions that you have about full hard dog nutrition or essential oils, homeopathy, or wellness for your dogs. Thank you, and have a great day.